Any confidence that I had any idea what I was doing left me the moment we entered the forest, when the running through the trees brought me back to the last time I raced through them at night, some unknown thing or things pacing us invisibly. The difference between now and then was that I had been trained and prepared to fight. I thought it would make a difference in how I felt. It didn't. I was scared, and not just a little. The rustling, rushing sound we had heard was getting closer to us and heading right for us, on the ground and moving fast. The four of us halted and hid and prepared ourselves to deal with whatever was coming at us. Two human forms burst out of the brush and ran in a straight line past where Gretchen and I were hiding. Hickory and Dickory grabbed them as they passed by them. The boys screamed in terror as Hickory and Dickory took them down. Their rifles went skidding across the ground. Gretchen and I rushed over to them and tried to calm them down. Being human helped. Neither was Enzo or Magdi. "Hey," I said, as soothingly as I could, to the one closest to me. "Hey, relax. You're safe. Relax." Gretchen was doing the same to the other one. Eventually, I recognized who they were, Albert Yu and Michael Gruber. Both Albert and Michael were people I had long filed away under the kind of a twit category, so I didn't spend any more time with them than I had to. They had returned the favor. "Albert," I said to the one closest to me, "where are Enzo and Magdi?"
"Get your thing off of me," Albert said.
Dickory was still restraining him. "Dickory," I said. It let Albert go. "Where are Enzo and Magdi?" I repeated.
"I don't know," Albert said. "We got separated. Those things in the trees started chanting at us, and Michael and I got spooked and took off."
"Chanting?" I asked.
"Or singing or clicking or whatever," Albert said. "We were walking along, looking for these things, when all these noises started coming out of the trees, like they were trying to show us that they had snuck up on us without us even knowing."
This worried me. "Hickory?" I asked.
"There is nothing significant in the trees," it said.
I relaxed a little.
"They surrounded us," Albert said. "And then Magdi took a shot at them, and then things really got loud. Michael and I got out of there. We just ran. We didn't see where Magdi and Enzo went."
"How long ago was this?" I asked.
"I don't know," Albert said. 10 minutes, 15, something like that."
"Show us where you came from," I said. Albert pointed. I nodded. "Get up," I said. "Dickory will take you and Michael back to the tree line. You can get back from there."
"I'm not going anywhere with that thing," Michael said, his first contribution to the evening.
"Okay, then you have two choices," I said. "Stay here and hope we come back for you before these things do, or hope that you make it to the tree line before they catch up with you. Or you can let Dickory help you and maybe survive. Your choice." I said it a little more forcefully than I had to, but I was annoyed that this idiot didn't want help staying alive.
"Okay," he said.
"Good," I said. I picked up their rifles and handed them to Dickory and took his. "Take them to the tree line near Magdi's homestead. Don't give them back their rifles until you get there. Come back and find us as soon as you can." Dickory nodded, intimidated Albert and Michael into movement, and headed off.
"I never liked them," Gretchen said as they left.
"I can see why," I said, and gave Dickory's rifle to Hickory. "Come on, let's keep going." We heard them before we saw them. Actually, Hickory, whose hearing goes above human range, heard them, trilling and chirping and chanting.
"They are singing," Hickory said quietly, and led Gretchen and me to them.
Dickory arrived, silently, just before we found them. Hickory handed over its rifle. In the small clearing were six figures. Enzo and Magdi were the first I recognized. They knelt on the ground, heads down, waiting for whatever was going to happen to them. The light was not good enough for me to see any expression on either of their faces, but I didn't have to see their faces to know that they were scared. Whatever had happened to the two of them had gone badly, and now they were just waiting for it to end, however it would end. I took in Enzo's kneeling form and remembered in a rush why I loved him. He was there because he was trying to be a good friend for Magdi,
trying to keep him out of trouble, or at the very least, to share his trouble if he could. He was a decent human being, which is rare enough, but is something of a miracle in a teenage boy. I came out here for him because I still loved him. It had been weeks since we'd said anything more than a simple hello at school. When you break up in a small community, you have to make some space. But it didn't matter. I was still connected to him. Some part of him stayed in my heart, and I imagined would for as long as I lived. Yes, it was a really inconvenient place and time to realize all of this, but these things happen when they happen. And it didn't make any noise, so it was all right. I looked over at Magdi, and this is the thought I had. When all of this is through, I am seriously going to kick his ass. The four other figures. Werewolves. It was the only way to describe them. They looked feral and strong and carnivorous and nightmarish, and with all of that was movement and sound that made it clear that there were brains in there to go along with everything else. They shared the four eyes of all the Roanoke animals we had seen so far, but other than that, they could have been lifted right out of folklore. These were werewolves. Three of the werewolves were busy taunting and poking Magdi and Enzo, clearly toying with them and threatening them. One of them held a rifle that it had taken off of Magdi and was jabbing him with it. I wondered if it was still loaded and what would happen to Magdi or the werewolf if it went off. Another held a spear and occasionally poked Enzo with it. The three of them were chirping and clicking at each other. I don't doubt they were discussing what to do with Magdi and Enzo and how to do it. The fourth werewolf stood apart from the other three and acted differently. When one of the other werewolves went to poke Enzo or Magdi, it would step in and try to keep them from doing it, standing between the humans and the rest of the werewolves. Occasionally, it would step in and try to talk to one of the other werewolves, gesturing back to Enzo and Magdi for emphasis. It was trying to convince the other werewolves of something. To let the humans go? Maybe. Whatever it was, the other werewolves weren't having any of it. The fourth werewolf kept at it anyway. It suddenly reminded me of Enzo, the first time I saw him, trying to keep Magdi from getting into an idiotic fight for no reason at all. It didn't work that time. Gretchen and I had to step in and do something. It wasn't working now, either. I glanced over and saw that Hickory and Dickory had both taken up positions where they could get clean shots at the werewolves. Gretchen had moved off from me and was setting up her own shot. Between the four of us, we could take all of the werewolves before they even knew what had happened to them. It would be quick and clean and easy, and we'd get Enzo and Magdi out of there and back home before anyone knew anything had happened. It was the smart thing to do. I quietly moved and readied my weapon and took a minute or two to stop shaking and steady up. I knew we'd take them in sequence. Hickory on the far left taking the first of the three group werewolves, Dickory taking the second, Gretchen the third, and I, the last one, standing away from the rest. I knew the rest of them were waiting for me to make the shot. One of the werewolves moved to poke Enzo again. My werewolf hurried, too late, to stop the assault. And I knew. I didn't want to. I just didn't. Didn't want to kill it. Because it was trying to save my friends, not kill them. It didn't deserve to die just because that was the easiest way to get back Enzo and Magdi. But I didn't know what else to do.